Looking at Psalm 39 this morning, the vanity of life or the vanity of man, the idea of vanity or emptiness is found in several verses. Verse 4, let me know how frail I am. Verse 5, my hands are as a handbreadth. Altogether vanity. Verse 6, a man walketh in a vain show. Verse 11, surely every man is vanity. And then verse 13, before I go and be no more. And so the brevity of life, how brief life is. Life is like a vapor. In comparison, it's very short. We think sometimes, you know, living 60, 70, 80, 90 years is a long time, but in the big picture, it's just very brief. And so we need to, you know, make sure that our life is right with God. We need to make sure that we're acting accordingly. And, you know, even though we have a brief life, we can use that to serve God. There were things that happened in the psalmist's life that got him to thinking about the vanity of life and how brief life is, and that's why he writes this psalm. We find at the beginning, for the chief musician, of course, if you look at the notes on Psalm 4, there was apparently a music director, and this psalm would have been for him, and he would have taken the lead in that. Notice in the heading for Jeduthun, he was a Levite. He was one of the music directors, and he had sons that were part of the music service. Look with me at 1 Chronicles 16, if you'll turn back with me there. 1 Chronicles 16, verses 41 and 42. And with them Heman and Jeduthun and the rest that were chosen who were mentioned by name to give thanks to Jehovah because of his loving kindness endureth forever. And with them Heman and Jeduthun with trumpets and cymbals for those that should shout aloud and with instruments for the songs of God and the songs of Jeduthun to be at the gate. So these were music directors. If you turn over to chapter 25, you find that he also has family that is working with him in this regard. Chapter 25, verse 1, Asaph, and we're going to study some of the psalms where the title will say a psalm of Asaph. Asaph, Heman, Jeduthun, who should prophesy with harps and with psalteries and with cymbals, and the number of them that did the work according to their service, and the sons of Asaph, and then look at verse 3, of Jeduthun, the sons of Jeduthun, several are mentioned there. Jeduthun with the harp, who prophesied in giving thanks and praising Jehovah and so forth. Come on down to verse 6, all these were under the hands of their father for song in the house of Jehovah with cymbals, psalteries, harps, for the service of the house of God. Asaph, Jeduthun, and Heman being under the order of the king. And so these were men selected to help lead the music service, and then they had children that did that as well. And sometimes, you know, the specific thing that they're doing is mentioned, whether it's the trumpets or the cymbals or whatever. Of course, we're at a time when instrumental music is authorized by God. And then there are several places in 2 Chronicles where this is mentioned as well. So this psalm may have been one specifically for this individual, written for him, composed for him, whatever the case might be, by David. But the theme, the main point we want to get is that it addresses the reality of the brevity of life, how brief it is. Let's read Psalm 39 together. I said, I will take heed to my ways, that I sin not with my tongue. I will keep my mouth with a bridle while the wicked is before me. I was dumb with silence. I held my peace even from good, and my sorrow was stirred. My heart was hot within me while I was musing. The fire burned. Then spake I with my tongue. Jehovah made me to know mine end and the measure of my days, what it is. Let me know how frail I am. Behold, thou hast made my days as handbreadths, and my lifetime is as nothing before thee. Surely every man at his best estate is altogether vanity. Surely every man walketh in a vain show. Surely they are disquieted in vain. He heapeth up riches and knoweth not who shall gather them. And now, Lord, what wait I for? My hope is in thee. Deliver me from all my transgressions. Make me not the reproach of the foolish. I was dumb. I opened not my mouth because thou did it. Remove thy stroke away from me. I am consumed by the blow of thy hand. When thou with rebukes dost correct man for iniquity, thou makest his beauty to consume away like a moth. Surely every man is vanity. Selah. Hear my prayer, O Jehovah, and give ear unto my cry. Hold not thy peace at my tears, for I am a stranger with thee, a sojourner as all my fathers were. O spare me, that I may recover strength before I go hence and be no more. The psalmist wants to speak of the brevity of life. And he has sorrow. There are some troubling things that are going on in his life. Verse 2, he is surrounded by the wicked. Verse 1, and so he doesn't want to speak. He's going to hold his tongue. He's not going to say anything that would cause him to sin in their presence. And that's an easy thing to do when we're in a stressful situation. We speak and we say things that we shouldn't. And notice in verse 1, he wants to keep a bridle on his tongue. This is the same image that James uses of the horse who has the bridle in his mouth, and that we're to control the tongue in James chapter 3. So that same image is used there. But when he speaks, beginning in verse 4, it is to talk about the vanity of man. He doesn't speak and open up his mouth and start sinning with his tongue. It's not one of these situations where it's like, well, I held it in so long and I just had to let it out. And when he let it out, it's this burst of bad things. When he does talk, it is to speak about God and the brevity of life. And so he acknowledges how frail and brief life really is. And we all need to consider that, especially with view of eternity and the judgment day and things like that. Notice also that any sin in his life, he's willing to confess that and be open with that. And we need to do the same. Since life is brief, we can't just play around with sin. We can't just, you know, do nothing about it. We need to make those changes before it's too late. And he has sorrow, he has agitation, he has tears. Verse 12, there's a sense of pain. And all of this brings him to speak about the brevity of life. And so it's a good psalm for us to be reminded of as well. Shannon, we'll start with you. Number one under the questions. What does the psalmist take care to guard, and when did he do it? Right. Okay. The Ecclesiastes 3, there's a time to speak and there's a time to be silent. And we need to have the wisdom to know which is which. Sometimes we don't know that. But here's a good time to be quiet. And he chose not to speak in the presence of his enemies. He was not going to sin with his mouth. And so there's different ways that we can sin. You know, we can sin in actions. We can sin in thoughts. We can sin with our tongue, he says. And so it's just something to guard, something to be mindful of, especially in the presence of someone, something or someone where it's a negative situation. We have wicked people here and so forth. Okay, Patty, number two. What part of the psalmist was hot? Right. It was inside of him, his heart. And this is talking about, you know, the stress inside, the anguish inside, the temper and things like that, that he is controlling. And it can be controlled. It should be controlled. It's not just something where we say, well, I just couldn't help myself. You know, that's just the way I am. I had to, you know, let it out and say something wrong. We learn from these verses about self-control. And he held his peace. And sometimes that, you know, is the best thing. But when he begins to speak, he does want to talk about, you know, the brevity of life. Larry, number three, what does the psalmist want to know from the Lord? Right, and we all need to be thinking about the same thing. The measure of my days, how frail I am. I don't think the psalmist is asking the Lord, let me know exactly how many hours I have left in my life in seconds. It's not the measure in that sense, but the measure of my days in the sense that the totality of it is very brief and frail, and we need to be reminded of that very thing. Number five, Mandy, how does, I'm sorry, number four, how does the psalmist describe his life? Handbreadths. And I made mention in the notes, what is a handbreadth? It's a measurement. It's a measurement, and it's when you take your four fingers and put them together, the length that you get between that is about 3 inches. And so the point is, my life is about 3 inches long. It's meant to be figurative of a very short distance. It was used in the book of Exodus to describe in the making of the tabernacle that the fabric was to be finished off to a handbreadth, you know, and the curtains and so forth. It's a measurement about 3 inches long. And so it's just showing how brief man is and how frail man is. And of course, we've already noticed that the word vanity is used several times in this psalm, just like in the book of Ecclesiastes. Emptiness, and in this case, it's applied to, in Ecclesiastes, it was applied to striving after things without serving God. Here, it's applied to how brief the length of time we have on this earth. And so it's a very good lesson for us today. But a handbreadth, about 3 inches wide. And we don't speak that way today. I think it's a beautiful figure. It's a reminder. And you've always got your fingers there to look at. 3 inches. Get up each day and say, you know, I've got 3 inches. And it might put some things in perspective as to, you know, what we need to accomplish and change and do and so forth. It's a good reminder right in front of our face of how brief man really is. Okay, Janus number five, how does man walk and what does he not know about his riches? Right. Again, vanity, brief life, and if he heaps up things, who knows who it's going to go to when he's gone. He can't take it with him. We came into this world naked. We'll leave naked. We can't take anything with us. That's mentioned different places in the Bible. And we just leave it to other people. We got through studying with Matthew, Ecclesiastes and Proverbs. And there's even Proverbs that say that when you leave it to somebody else, you think it's going to be left for good, but it might not be used for good. You don't even know how it's going to be used. Well, I'm giving it to my children. Well, you don't know how they're going to use it. Or they pass it on to somebody else. Eventually it gets passed on to somebody that maybe misuses it. We just don't know what it's going to go to. So that's not what is to be our focus and our goal and our, you know, what we're putting our stock in. Do you remember in Luke chapter 12, the farmer who built the bigger barns, you know, and he builds these barns and bigger barns. And then one night he's gone, and the text says, you know, whose shall these things be? He's gone. Who's it going to go to? The two brothers that were fighting over, you know, covetousness there and the inheritance. So it's our life is short. We don't need to be stockpiling, heaping up riches, thinking that, you know, that's what life is about. We don't even know who it's going to go to. We certainly can't take it ourselves. So a lesson in there about priorities and riches and so forth, and being careful about that. Matthew, who does the psalmist wait for and hope in? Right. So in contrast to the riches, and here's this person heaping up riches, verse 7, my hope is in the Lord. I'm waiting. And the word wait used in the Psalms is confident trust and assurance in God. That's where the psalmist is putting his hope and his trust, not in the riches of verse 6. Okay? And that needs to be our same thought. Turn with me to 1 Timothy 6 while we're on that note. That was one of our applications. But notice the contrast between hope, not hope in riches, but hope in God. 1 Timothy 6 and verse 17. Charge them that are rich in this present world, and them there would be members of the church, that they be not high-minded, nor have their hope set on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who giveth us richly all things. And so the psalmist's hope and trust was in the Lord, not on the riches of verse 6. Now we come to the matter of transgressions. If you think about it, these are some of the key things that come up. When you think about life being brief, what are some of the things that come up? Well, how should I use my tongue? I've got just a short period of time. What should my attitude be toward riches? I can't take them with me. And then what would be another thing that would normally come to a person's mind who's, you know, somewhat, God-fearing? And so it'd be, well, my transgressions, my sins. I've got just a short life. What am I going to do about this? You see how these things, they're not just miscellaneous things that are coming up. They're coming up because they're related to the brevity of life. And so now we have verse 8, deliver me from all my transgressions. Why? Life is brief. I want to be right with God when I die or when the Lord comes. And so life is brief. Deliver me from my transgressions. And of course, under the gospel dispensation, that involves, you know, properly obeying the gospel and so forth. But these are things that come up when we understand, you know, how brief life really is. And so, deliver me from my transgressions. That's number 7. Mike, what does the psalmist want to be delivered from?
Transgression.
Right. And then make me not a reproach of the foolish. Please take away any sin that is in my life and don't allow me to be a reproach and a byword to worldly people. And so these are things that come up when we think about the brevity of life. And of course, we're delivered from our transgressions today through the blood of Christ. We have to properly obey the gospel and live faithfully. And this should be something on our mind, because life is brief. Okay. Patricia, number 8. Why was the psalmist silent, and what does he want removed? Right. We notice this. Look back at chapter 38, verses 1 and 2. A lot of people think that chapter 38 and 39 are very closely related. Do you remember back at 38, 1 and 2, the psalmist, he recognized that he had sin. Look at verse 3, because of my sin. Verse 4, mine iniquities. But notice verse 1 and 2, he believed that God was chastising him for his sin. And notice he describes it as arrows that stick fast and hand sore pressed. This is the same thing in 39, 9, and 10. If there is sin in his life, he believes that God is, putting a blow on him, a punishment for this. He believes he has a healthy conscience about this whole thing. He's not hardened in any way, and he believes that God is putting a blow on him. Verse 11, rebuking the person who has iniquity. And so when that's going on, look at verse 9. I'm not arguing against God. I'm just sitting there taking it. Some people would shake their fist at God and want to argue with God about it. But he's going to take his chastisement and he's going to keep his mouth quiet, just like back in verse 1 and 2 when he's in the presence of his enemies. He's not going to say anything wrong. And when he's in the presence of God's rebuking, he's not going to say anything that is wrong. And he wants God to deliver him from these transgressions and at the same time remove the punishment that goes along with that. So really, the psalmist is also teaching us this a psychological thing, and that is that we need to have a healthy inner conscience toward God. But so many people are hardened, either they don't believe in God, or if they do believe in God, that they're not going to respond, they don't care in any way. But he cared, he wanted to be forgiven, and he didn't want God to be chastising him. He didn't want God's wrath upon him, that type of thing. So that's what's going on here in these verses. But notice how he's silent. He's not arguing with God, trying to say, you don't know what you're doing or why. Or what did Job do? He just kept quiet. It said that he would not sin with his lips. And his wife is suggesting, well, just curse God and die. But Job's thinking, I'm not going to charge God foolishly. Turn back here to Job chapter 1. If we start speaking against God, then what's going to happen is we're going to end up indicting him in some way or accusing him in some way, charging him with something that doesn't belong to him. And that's what Job had enough wisdom to not do. Do you remember in Job 1 verse 22, in all of this Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishly. That's to attribute to God, to charge God, to attribute to him folly. In other words, God, you're doing something very foolish with all of this. He would not charge God with that. And that's what happens when you start talking and reasoning. You think you're going to argue with him about such and such in your life, and you end up, and then verse 10, in all of this, he did not sin with his lips. He didn't want to say something, and so the psalmist is smart, like Job. I'm going to keep my mouth quiet. God knows what is best. I do want to be forgiven of my sin. And of course, we can speak to God about those matters. But to speak up and start arguing with God is going to cause a problem. Okay. Any thoughts or comments or anything thus far in our study? So the brevity of life gets us to thinking about the use of our tongue, the use of our riches, needing to be forgiven of sin, our attitude toward God, and so forth. Okay? And then that brings us up to Eric. Number 9, what happens when man is rebuked by God for his iniquity? Right. Right. So that's why he wants to be delivered from that. He believes that he would be consumed by God's punishment if he did not take that away. And then, Joyce, what request does the psalmist have for the Lord and why?
I had a question about that.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Well, I made a note on that. It's probably like a moth is probably not like the moth itself, but what the moth eats, the clothing, and eats up the beauty of the clothing. And it just, we're not told if he thinks about physical or inward. It's just you're going to make man deteriorate if you keep your rebuke and reproach on him, just like a moth eats up clothing. And I want to be removed from that because I'm already a handbreadth. I'm already a person who has a brief life. And so please remove the sin and the stroke that goes with it so that I can, be brought back into your good grace and so forth. I don't want to be consumed like a moth. And again, that the psalmist, that's assuming that the psalmist has a conscience about sin and punishment. A lot of people don't. They're walking around, they're not thinking, well, I'm being consumed like a moth. They don't care. They have it has to do with your conscience and your belief in God and your understanding of God. But people in the world that don't have that, they just go on their merry way when they sin. They don't feel like they're being, God's stroke is on them. Look at verse 10. They're not walking around, God, please remove your stroke from me. They don't care about things like that. This is a conscience ridden person, a godly person, someone who is confessing sin, praying to God, trusting in God. And when we're like that, we'll feel these kinds of things when we sin. And we'll want to be removed from any of God's punishment. But when we harden ourselves and don't have that kind of relationship, then we just get up each day and it's no different than the previous day. Does that make sense? It's someone who obviously has a healthy relationship with God, but when sin is in his life, he wants that removed. And that needs to be our approach. And that's what we can learn from the psalmist. But as far as, is he talking about his outward beauty and physical? I don't know. He's just talking about himself being consumed, whether it's inward or outward or both. We've been studying recently about how back in chapter 38 about, my bruises, my fainting, my loins burning. He believed that he's being, punished for his sin. And some suggest that if this is David, and we're not told about some of these things, but when you look back in 1 Samuel, when he's having these problems with Saul and Absalom and Adonijah and all these things, that he could have had illnesses and sicknesses that are not recorded there that he's suffering from, physical things. I've read, but again, it's just some things that you read. You got to be careful about speculation. But remember, David had a number of concubines and wives, and some talk about possibly like a sexually transmitted disease. My loins are burning, Some have suggested things like that. So some sort of illnesses, some sort of problems that he's going through as a result of his sins, and that could easily be the case. When you consider, how many people he was with. So, but again, that's speculation. We're not told any of those things, but we are told, we can be confident that it involves physical things. Not all of this is just, poetic, figurative language. It does involve physical problems, but we're not given the nature of it, elsewhere. So we got to be careful about that. Does that help? Okay, Sherry, number 10, what request does the psalmist have for the Lord and why?
Hear his prayer and not to be silent, for he's straying
to
God.
Okay. To hear his prayer. Did I skip over you, Joyce? Take number 11 then. Why does the psalmist want to be spared and when? I got sidetracked there. Right. So how does this whole thing close? Because man has a brief life. Hear my prayer. I'm passing through life like a sojourner. My stay here is not permanent. That's why the figure of a sojourner, just passing through life. So hear my prayer and spare me. I'm gonna die one day, and I'm gonna go, and I'm not gonna be able to come back to this life. He's not saying in verse 13 that man doesn't exist after death. You have to take in the other Bible passages on that. He's just simply saying that with regard to my life now, I'm going to go and I can't be anymore. And that's true for all of us. We're not going to come back. There's no reincarnation. We don't get a do-over. We get one time in this life. And so we've got to be thinking about, our tongue, our riches, our sins, God's punishment, and we've got to get our life right. And so he closes on a positive note of, please hear my prayer, and I'm passing through just like a sojourner, and I want to be spared, I want to be recovered from these things, from sin, any problems that might be in my life, because I'm about to, I'm going to go from here and be no more. And that's a great sermon right there. I'm going to, before I go hence, and be no more. So it's something to think about in our life. Okay, before we look at some of these applications, any thoughts or comments on that? The brevity of life, it's a great chapter to think about. Okay, Shannon, we'll look at some of these. What does Ecclesiastes 3:7 say? Right. And so we've got to have the wisdom to know the difference between the two. And there's a time to be silent. And he mentions that in verse 2 and in verse 9. And what sin does James warn against? Patty, James 3, 1 through 12. Right. The sin of the tongue or not controlling the tongue. And that goes along with verse 1, that I might not sin with my tongue. Larry, number 2. What does the psalmist want to be taught in Psalm 90, verse 12? Exactly. And this is similar to verse 4, taken from verse 4, that I might know my end, number my days. And then that's the well-known psalm where he talks about how that we might live 70 or 80 years, and then that's it. I'll take some of these others just for because of our time. What does... How does James describe the life of man like a vapor? And what encouragement does he give? If we know to do good and do it not, we sin. Life is short, so if we know that there's something that we need to be doing, we need to do that. What does Jesus warn about concerning the culmination of riches? Well, in Luke 12, we talked about that. The man gathered up all he could, and he died and wasn't able to take it with him, and his soul was not right with God. And so he talks to those two brothers about, you know, beware of covetousness. They wanted to come and have him, you know, divide it. What are we to do and not do with our riches? We're not to let our riches, you know, the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. We are to share and distribute and put our hope in God. And in Hebrews 13, we are not to... He says there, be free from the love of money. We're to put our trust in God. He'll take care of us. Number 3, our hope is to be in the Lord, and we need to desire to be removed from our transgressions. Who are we to hope in? All of those passages there in 1 Timothy deal with hoping in God. Who makes possible deliverance from our transgressions? Jesus, through his blood. We're delivered from sin through the blood of Christ, Hebrews 9:17. It is best to keep quiet when we're chastened by the Lord. What did Job do when he was chastened by God? We looked at that earlier. He did not sin with his lips. But Job 1:22, even more so, he did not charge God with foolishness. He didn't say to God, you've done something you shouldn't have done by making this deal with Satan up in heaven. That was all foolish. You shouldn't have done that. He did not charge God with doing something that was foolish. And the more we talk, the more we end up either blaming God or doing something, and it's just best not to to go down that road. So verse 9, the psalmist, when he's being rebuked for his sin, he just kept quiet about that. Okay. What does the chastening of the Lord show about himself, and what does it accomplish? He chastens those whom he loves, and it's to accomplish good fruit and peace and righteousness, and that's why we go through the chastening of the Lord. We're like sojourners passing through life. We sing in our psalm books, this world is not my home. We're just passing through, and we need to remember that and make sure our life is right with God. Abraham became a sojourner by faith, and so do we. Peter describes the Christian's life as a sojourner, just passing through life, and so we're to be free from the lusts and things that go on in this life, because it needs to be like we're just passing it by. Don't sit there and grab onto it and hold onto it, but abstain from fleshly lust. Let it go by. We're just passing through life and keeping our eyes on God. And then last of all, where do we go after we die, and can we change our destiny? Of course, we go into the Hadean realm, the realm of departed spirits. There's a place of torment. There's a place of paradise, and we cannot change our destiny. We have one life to live. How many times do we die? Just once. It is appointed unto man once to die. And so the psalmist says, I'm going from hence and will be no more. And so our destiny is fixed at death, and we can't come back and get a do-over. It just doesn't work like that. So we need to make sure that our life is right with God. Let's sing a little bit about Psalm 39 this morning. While we're getting ready for that, does anybody have any comments or observations or thoughts on Psalm 39? The brevity of life. We're going to sing the first six verses based upon the song Cleanse Me. Let's all sing. I will take heed and guard my ways, I said, so that my tongue no sinful world shall stain. As with a bridle I will keep my mouth, while in my presence wicked men remain. In silence dumb I cease from speaking good. My heart within was hot, my sorrow stirred. And while I mused, the fire began to burn. Then spake I with my tongue this earnest word. My end, O Lord, and measure of my days, make me to know and thus my frailty see. Lo, thou hast made my days an handbreadth long. My lifetime is as nothing unto thee. Each man at best is altogether vain. Each man does surely walk in empty show. They heap up wealth and vex themselves for naught, nor know to whom their garnered riches go. Sing the last 7 through 13 to the tune of God of Our Fathers. And now, O Lord, what wait I longer for? My expectation ever is in Thee. Deliver me from all my sinfulness, the scorn of foolish men, oh, make not me. Yes, I was dumb, I opened not my mouth, because this work was done at thy command. But now remove thy stroke away from me. I am consumed beneath thy smiting hand. Thou with rebukes dost chasten man for sin.
His beauty fades beneath the touch of death. It is consumed as by the fretting moth. Oh, surely every man is but a breath. Lord, hear my prayers, heed thou my cry and tears. A stranger here, I pass as all before. Oh, spare me that I may recover strength.